Golf Today.
She's the world number one. You can make the argument she's the most dominant player on the planet right now. I'm, of course, talking about Nellie Korda. Live look in as she is putting in some work at the Chevron Championship, trying to win the season's first major and win her fifth straight start. It has been an incredible run, and what a lead up and build up until this season's first major with this, the Chevron Championship. Hey there, welcome into Golf Today here with you until for the next 2 hours until we hand you off until final round coverage of the Western Intercollegiate. I'm George Savarikas. He is Jordan Cornett. We have a man later in the show in Jim Furyk who's been in the zone for a round, going sub 60 twice. But Nellie's zone has now spanned 2 months plus to rip off four straight wins, Jordan. It's incredible.
I'm just excited to watch her tee off tomorrow. Can she do it for a fifth? Can it start to go into, okay, I'm going to start tacking off these majors right now? A lot of expectation, a lot of pressure put on her. She's a runaway favorite going into this one, but we saw Scottie Scheffler handle that in Augusta a week ago, and there's no reason not to believe Nellie with how she's firing right now. Can't do the exact same.
If she could make it five, then that's just the kickoff.
That is rare air.
You're already pretty much locking down almost player of the year with five wins and a major, but then it just sets her up for the rest of the year to have a potentially historic type of season, because right now she has matched her career high in a single season that we saw back in 2021 when she had four wins in a major.
She's healthy. She's focused. She's evolved as a player. She's not only just winning these four tournaments that she's won, she's winning in clutch moments, taking playoffs to handle them in some. She's showing a variety of different ways, new courses she hasn't seen. She's still winning. She is ready to come out here and put on a show, and I can't wait to watch.
Couldn't think of better storylines to have heading into this, what marks the 53rd Chevron Championship. Remember, debuted back in 1972. The event officially became a women's major championship in 1983, so this is the second time. The tournament is being played at the club at Carlton Woods in the Houston suburb of The Woodlands, Texas. Coverage beginning tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel 2. Some of the notable tee times and a little bit of foreshadowing from our man Jordan there. As you see, Nellie is off at 2:10 Eastern time with defending champion Lilia Vu. We get going early. You see those two groups at 8:59 Eastern time. One is off the first, one is off the 10th. I got my eyes on that group at 9:21 a.m. Eastern time. Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, and Lexi Thompson. Going to be a fun trio to watch. Amy Rogers joins us now. Amy, no shortage of storylines. We were trying to just touch on a couple. Give us a rundown of what you're looking at.
Hey there, George. Well, history and major championships, they just seem to go hand in hand. And it's around these big events that players gear their entire schedules, making sure that their games are exactly where they want them to be coming into these big events because they just mean that much. Well, this Chevron Championship making history extends beyond just hoisting the trophy here on Sunday, as three players in the field won't just be chasing a win, but also pursuing history of their own over the next several days, starting off with Nellie Korda. She has a chance to add her name to a very short list that includes Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam as she looks to win for a fifth consecutive start. I asked her yesterday what history means to her and about her place in it, and she said that she's really just been so focused on the present, she hasn't given it much thought just yet. Well, Lydia Ko, another player here in the field, chasing history this weekend. Now, after she won that season opener at the beginning of this year, that put her within just 1 point of qualifying for the LPGA Tour Hall of Fame. She's just 26 years of age, and she just needs 27 points to get into the hall. She has 26, and if she were to win here on Sunday, that would earn her 2 points for a major victory and put her over that finish line. Now, a win here Sunday would be a second Chevron title for Ko, a third career major title, and a 21st win on the LPGA Tour. Now, Angela Stanford also chasing a bit of history here this weekend in Houston. Thanks to a special exemption, Stanford is in the field competing this week in her 98th consecutive major. Now, her goal is to get to 100 straight majors played. That means that she will need to qualify, getting through that 36-hole qualifier just next month to get into the field at the U.S. Women's Open, and will then need to also make a start in the KPMG Women's PGA Championship in June. Yesterday, I had a chance to speak with her, and at 46 years of age, she said that it's just getting a little bit tougher for her physically to not only get ready for these rounds, but to rehab afterwards. I asked her why she's putting herself through all this, and if she reached reaches her goal if she intends to walk away.
You know, you sometimes think there you would see things once in a generation or once in a lifetime. And, you know, even if it wasn't me, I would still want one of our players to cross the line. Like, I wouldn't care who it was. I would want an LPGA player to get to 100 because I think it is going to be historically once in a tour kind of deal. Obviously, because Jack Nicklaus is the only human to ever do this. So, you know, regardless if it was me or somebody else, I hope I get there. I appreciate Chevron helping me in this step, the 98th step. I have my U.S. Open qualifier next week, so I've been thinking about that quite a bit, but I don't want it to stop at 98.
So if you reach that goal this year, is that it? Will you walk away at that point?
Yeah, you know, it's been pretty interesting. I don't really want to talk about it, which I think is weird because I'm one of those people. I'll answer any question I've always been that way. I'm an open book when it comes to media it's been weird. It's like, I don't really want to talk about it, but if I can get to 100, I want to go to Evian and then I'll play my favorites this fall. And honestly, I think that's it. The time I've put in this off season and getting to the point where it takes so much just to get up and play, you know, I've been really healthy and my body's it just takes so much more to recover. So again, it goes back to respecting the competition, respecting the game. If I can't give it 110%, it's time to go do something else.
You heard Stanford mention a moment ago Jack Nicklaus. He holds the record for consecutive majors played at 154. If Stanford can reach her goal of 100 consecutive majors played, that would be a first on the LPGA Tour. George?
Thank you, Amy. And that 154 number by Jack, just another one of the ridiculous records that the Golden Bear has. So you get a double dip on Thursday. We start at 10 a.m. Eastern time for round one coverage. Then they circle back later in the day at 6 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel and Peacock. On the weekend, it shifts on over to NBC and Peacock as well.
Jordan Cornette, George Savarikas back here on Golf Today. And what an effort from Lottie Woad at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Florida State sophomore went ahead and birdied three of her last four holes to beat Bailey Shoemaker by one stroke. Woad finished with a 69 at Augusta National in the final round to finish at 8 under.
Jordan, as you know, to the victor goes the spoils. And here's what Lottie Woad gets as part of being the Augusta National Women's Amateur Champion. She is exempt, assuming she stays an amateur, the next five Augusta National Women's Amateurs. She's in the 2024 Chevron Championship, the U.S. Women's Open, a Mundi Evian Championship, and the AIG Women's Open. That's four majors she has the invite to. Any USGA, RNA, PGA of America Amateur Championship she is also eligible for the next year. So she's got a pretty packed schedule, to say the least, in 2024. And Lottie Woad is now on the show ahead of her Chevron Championship debut. Lottie, what's the buildup like this week compared to what you experienced a couple weeks back at the Augusta National Women's Amateur?
The build-up's a little different. I got here on Sunday afternoon, so been here for a little bit now, getting a feel for the course. But obviously before Augusta, I didn't think I'd be here this week. I thought I'd be playing in college, so it's definitely a little different.
So, Lottie, how do you manage those emotions? I mean, obviously you talk about the expectation, but you deliver in Augusta and you're here and you're going to be a part of this tour. This is your first LPGA Tour event. And it's a major, and it's a big opportunity. You haven't really had a chance to even catch your breath since Augusta. How are you managing these emotions?
Yeah, it's definitely been a crazy week, kind of flown by. I'm just honestly really excited to get going. Haven't played an LPGA event before, and for it to be a major is really cool, and get a play of all the people I look up to. So it's just going to be a really valuable learning experience for me, no matter what happens, and I'm just really excited.
Write the script at the end of the week. If you do what, then you can leave the Chevron Championship and say, that was a great week for me.
I honestly haven't really got a number in mind, a position or anything. I kind of don't really like to do that. I generally just going to try and stick to my game plan that I've worked out and try and hit certain stats that I've got in mind and kind of see where that puts me. But obviously to be here on the weekend would be amazing. But I haven't really got a specific number in mind that I'm going to be like that. That was a great week.
Lottie, I know you're going to be focused on obviously what's going on there with Chevron and playing in this major. But I know a part of you is also going to be thinking about your teammates. You're wearing the Florida State hat. Your Noles are going to be playing collegiately for an ACC championship. What has the messaging been back and forth with your friends and teammates?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that I couldn't play in the ACCs, but I'm sure that our team will do great. So I'm going to definitely be watching when I finish my round tomorrow. There's 3 rounds of stroke play for them, and then hopefully they get into match play. So I'm just hoping they can play well and me as well. But they've all been really, really supportive of me. I when I got back, I asked the question like look can I go play in this? And they were like, of course. So they've been really supportive and been messaging back and forth. So I'm really grateful for that.
Winning the Augusta National Women's Amateur has such a big impact on your stature, not just the women's amateur game, but the game of golf. And to do it at Augusta on that Saturday is just so special. Since then, while you've had some time to relish what you were able to achieve, what's been the coolest text or call that you had after where someone reached out to just say congratulations or even share a thought with you?
Yeah, I've had a lot of pros reach out that I look up to, particularly like from England, all the people that I watch. But even this week, just being on the range and players that I look up to, kind of bits too scared to talk to, and then they come up and are like, look, I watched last week, well done, and that was really cool of them to take the time to come up and say that to me.
Lottie, I'm always interested in this as a former athlete myself, superstitions. And I read this one, so I'm not sure if it's entirely true, but I heard you have a superstition of you only play with a golf ball with a number 4 on it. Is that true? And if so, why?
Yeah, I do. I honestly don't know when it started. It's probably been maybe 5 or so years, but I guess I played with a number 4 golf ball then, and I played well, and I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to switch that, and I'm definitely too scared to change that now. So like I'm in the Florida State locker room and just be like, does anyone have number 4s? Like, I'll give you these number 2s, and we just kind of switched them out.
Well, I mean, if you have a superstition, you got to stick
and
with
if you're
it.
Playing like Lottie, then absolutely, you keep it going.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? So, Lottie, as you're getting ready to make your Chevron Championship debut, we've seen AMs like Lydia Ko win on the LPGA Tour in the last decade or so. The last AM to win a major was Catherine Lacoste in 1967. Just big picture. It seems like when we have players leave college and turn pro, there's such a shorter period for them to get comfortable with professional life. Why do you think that we're seeing AMs have quicker success in the professional ranks?
Yeah, I think it's definitely due to the college game, just the schedules that we have, and we're playing against the best players in the world like every week, so that definitely prepares us. And the college venues that we play at, they put us on like major championship courses and stuff like that, so we're kind of getting used to these tougher courses and layouts. So I definitely think the transition is a lot quicker than maybe it used to be.
Well, Lottie, looking forward to see you in your major debut this week at the Chevron Championship. Play well, and I'm guessing by the end of the week you can go up to some of your peers out there and say hello and don't be too worried because they know what you've done with the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Certainly belong.
Thank you.
Take a look at the watch list for the 2024 Onyx Award presented by Stifel, award given annually to the most outstanding player in women's college golf. And you see some of the names on that first page there, including Ingrid Lindblad, who was on that first page leaderboard, the Augusta National Women's Amateur. No surprise that we have the champ there, Lottie Woade, also in the mix. Let's flash back to the 2018 Chevron Championship, one of the best finishes we've ever seen in Chevron Championship history. At Mission Hills, Pernilla Lindberg beat Envy Park on the 8th playoff hole. And this Had to go to Monday morning call due to darkness. They were both at 15 under for the week. It's part of that playoff in Pernilla, Lindbergh. Not many people get to say not only they beat Envy Park in a playoff to win a major, but they outputted Envy Park to get the job done. That was Pernilla's first win on the LPGA Tour, and she made a big splash in a number of ways that week. A week that has certainly defined her career out there. And these are the longest playoffs in LPGA Tour history. The longest, who could forget, the 1972 Corpus Christi Open. That one went 10 holes. The Maybank Championship just last year, Celine Boutier won in a 9-hole playoff. And then it's the 2018 Chevron Championship with that 8-hole playoff. So, Jordan, yeah, I remember watching that live and knowing Pernilla from her time in Orlando when Golf Channel used to be down there. And that was just one of those weeks that comes together for an athlete where her putter carried her. And it just seemed like every big putt she had to make dropped. And when you stare down Envy Park, who was back then kind of a dominant number one, even more so than we've seen the heights that Nelly Korda's trying to get to, not only does that make it a memorable week, but to do it when you're facing the best has to give you such inner confidence.
Well, on top of that, Pernilla, she's chasing her first win on the tour. And so you don't even understand what it takes to win at that point. Sometimes it's better to not know what you don't know going in there. But it being drawn out to that point, you go through those four holes of playoff, darkness ensues, and you go, okay, I've got to stay in this championship mentality. And then I've got to wake up and I've got to do another four rounds off the best park. I mean, that's really earning it. That's really earning that major championship. And, you know, I think her story's a fun one. She said, you know, growing up in Sweden, played the game a little bit, but had no idea where it was going to take me in life. And takes her to Oklahoma State, Stillwater, Oklahoma, very different from her homeland. And she really carved out a nice career. And that one win, that major championship win, is about as impressive of a way to do it as it gets.
Yeah, now let's welcome in the 2018 champ, Pernilla Lindbergh, with us. Pernilla, good to see you. I mean, we're talking about the memories from 2018. Was that the best putting week you've ever had?
Probably. It was for sure up there. You know, I would say the putting has been the strength of most of my career. But maybe my ball striking hasn't always matched up with it. But that week, for sure, all came together. And, you know, that's why I'm still out there grinding now, trying to put all those pieces together again.
Pernilla, as we were talking there, and I'm sure you got a chance to hear a little bit about it, I'm just in awe of, you know, chasing your first win at that moment. And you have to play four playoff holes on a Sunday. And then you look around and it's dark and you know, this thing isn't going to get figured out on a Sunday. I'm going to have to go into a Monday and I play one, two, three, play four more holes. What was your mentality as you went into Sunday night to lay your head down, knowing what was in front of you on Monday?
Yeah, that I've thought about that a lot. A lot of people have asked me that question. And, you know, it really helped that I was sleeping on the lead after Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So by Sunday, you know, I felt way more comfortable. I would say I was probably more nervous sleeping on the lead Friday night, Saturday night. So what I told myself on Sunday night, I was in the playoff. It was just me and Imbi left. It was more of a match play situation. I had done all the hard work to get myself into that chance to win the championship. So, you know, I actually slept pretty good that Sunday.
Pernilla, when you've done it once and you do it in a major way, I mean, winning the Chevron Championship, what's it like trying to rekindle that magic formula?
It's still hard because you know what it takes, but everyone out here is just so good nowadays that, you know, you'd really need all your pieces of the game to work out, but you also need a little bit of luck on your side. You know, I remember chipping in once the first round that week. You know, you just need those little kind of breaks to go with you the weeks that you end up near the top of the leaderboard. But of course, at least what I can keep telling myself is I've done it before, so of course I can do it again.
Pernilla, I want to think back to your collegiate days, and I marveled at, you know, somebody coming from Sweden, and, you know, golf was just something you played, and you're like, okay, I'm really good at this, I'm going to go chase it, to Stillwater, Oklahoma, as an Oklahoma State Cowboy. What do you remember from that time where you're like, okay, this is my dream, it's bringing me to the States, to a place that's very different than any I've ever known.
Yeah, I came over on a few different recruiting trips, but as soon as I saw the golf course and practice facilities at Oklahoma State, I knew that's where I wanted to go. It also helped that there had been a lot of Swedish players actually at Oklahoma State ahead of me, and I knew they had all loved it. So it actually, I loved it. I know it was a big, cultural differences and a big change to go from Sweden to Stillwater, but I had quite a few international teammates on the team, and yeah, they had had a lot of Swedes before. But you know, if you move that far away from home and you're that serious about your golf, I knew my priorities. I wanted a good golf course, good practice facility, and that's what I was getting there.
Pernilla, I feel like the size of Sweden and the number of professional golfers and major champions that it's produced, it kind of punches up its weight class compared to how small it is. And you mentioned the pipeline, Jovanica Sorenstam on the women's side, who you looked up to, Henrik Stenson on the men's side. Just last week, Ludvig Åberg, a fellow Swede, runner-up at the Masters in his debut. What's the sense of pride like, and were you able to watch any of the Masters?
Yeah, I love watching the Masters every year. I actually had a chance to go up and play Augusta for the first time ever in February this year, so it was really special watching it on TV this year when I could relate to different shots even more so than previous years. I was already here in Houston on site on Sunday. I was out walking the golf course Sunday afternoon, streaming the coverage on my phone as I'm out here preparing for my major, because I was obviously rooting for Ludvig there, but was very impressed to see what he... I was impressed, but also not surprised to see what he was doing.
Pernilla, there'll be 11 former champions there at the club at Carlton Woods this week. So it's a loaded field. A lot of people that know what it takes to win a major, you being one of those 11. What is it going to take? How does this club play to you there at Carlton Woods in order to be one that is in contention there on Sunday?
Yeah, obviously it's a second year at this new venue for us. I personally obviously always loved Mission Hills. That's where I won this championship, and it has a special place in my memory, and for some reason that place always brought out the best in my game. But yeah, new challenge here, quite different golf course than what we got used to in the desert. Everything from the style of golf, the grass and everything, but the greens are brand new, so they are very firm, which I'm sure you've heard from everyone probably here on site this week. It's going to be a tough challenge, lots of patience and a lot of holes where you're not going to be able to attack the pin, and then take advantage of the few holes where you can. But I mean, like any major championship, you're going to need to strike the ball good and putt good.
Pernilla, would you want firm greens with your style again?
I have learned to handle firm greens better. I would say a few years ago, coming from Europe, I guess I should be used to kind of that kind of style of golf, at least in the British Isles. But coming over here, I got very used to kind of more American style golf, where you can fire at the pins with a high ball flight and know it was going to stop. But no, I've gotten a lot more creative, I would say, in my game in the last couple of years. A lot better at shaping shots, so I'm going to enjoy the challenge out here.
All right, getting back to your roots this week at the Chevron Championship. Great to visit with you, and play well this week.
Thank you, guys.
And looking ahead to the future, exciting day. We're 100 days out from the start of the Paris Olympic Games. We're going to get a check in on where the U.S. men's and women's golf standings are right now, plus a special message from our very own Mike Tirico, who is in Paris. Lucky Mike, stay with us. We had Angela Stanford earlier in the show saying how important that number 100 was to her. Well, we got our eye on 100 days out from the Paris Olympics. Countdown is on. Tune in this summer on NBC and Peacock to see the greatest athletes in the world go for the gold in the City of Light. Our own Mike Tirico is in Paris to mark this special day. Mike?
Hey, guys. We've gone from Amen Corner to the Eiffel Tower here in Paris as today marks 100 days until the opening ceremony for the Paris Olympics. And, of course, we're talking golf in the games. And Scottie Scheffler, who took his second green jacket last week at Augusta, he's number one in qualifying right now. Remember back in Tokyo 3 years ago, we watched Xander Schauffele take gold. The Californian is currently on track to make the team again and try to defend that gold medal. Now the reigning U.S. Open champ, Wyndham Clark, he's also right in the mix to make the U.S. team. Over on the women's side, defending Olympic champion Nelly Korda, you know the big story in golf this week as she seeks her fifth straight win, that at the Chevron Championship. She's currently at the top of the rankings for the women in terms of Olympic golf. And that's a big question coming in. Will she take a second gold medal in Paris in what's part of already a tremendous season? But we know it's only April. The games are 14 weeks away, so that's about 14 tournaments. That's plenty of golf until the final qualifying ends. Now, it's a little shorter than the 100 days. The final qualifying for the men ends June 17th, right after the U.S. Open. The women will know who's Paris-bound a week later on June 24th. It's one of many sports at the Games, but for those of us who love golf, it's one of the favorites, as golf in the Olympics, for the third time since its return, will happen here in the Paris Games. See you then. Au revoir.
Jordan, in my next life, wouldn't mind coming back as Mike Tirico and going from Augusta National straight to Paris.
And making it look so easy all the while.
Then speaking of making it look easy, farthest thing when it comes to the U.S. men's Olympic standings, this is the rank. And remember, only four qualify. So the cutoff right now in the world rankings is eight. Goes Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Wyndham Clark, Patrick Cantlay. Max Homa would be the odd man out. You have to be among the top 15, and your country can have a max of four. So that's why Max Homa currently would be on the outside looking in. But like Mike said, we've got a lot of time until that team is decided. On the women's side, Nelly Korda and Lilia Vu basically locks. So it's Megan King, Allison Lee, and Allison Corpuz, who won last year's U.S. Women's Open. Those three jockeying for the last two spots for the women's side when it comes to the Olympic golf program. And both those sides will be competing at Le Golf National. If you're a DP World Tour fan, you're very familiar with this course, which has hosted the French Open since 1991. Also played host to the 2018 Ryder Cup, won by Team Europe. And now it'll be a part of the 2024 Olympic golf competitions.
This is one of the achievements that you have in mind. This is like really big, like kind of winning a major. So yeah, it would be awesome. I think it would be big for the golf in general in France.
Obviously, it would be a tremendous amount of pride representing your country and representing all the people back home. And hopefully, that's something that I'll be able to do. But I try not to think about it too much until that week actually comes around. So, but yes, it'll be very cool.
Pretty good chance we're going to see Ludvig Åberg as part of these Paris Summer Olympic Games 100 days from now. Remember, you can catch it on NBC and Peacock. We have more golf today on the other side of the short break.
Still to come on golf today, it's a major week on the LPGA, and we're catching up with three-time Chevron champ and World Golf Hall of Famer Amy Alcott. Speaking of major, Ludvig Åberg, coming off a runner-up finish at the Masters. He's back in the field for this week's signature event. We'll hear from him as well. And a man who knows a thing or two about Harbortown, Jim Furyk, a 17-time PGA Tour winner, joins us for a past champ chat. Hour two of Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
We find ourselves on the eve of the first women's major of the year as the best of the world gets set for the Chevron Championship from the club at Carlton Woods. Coverage begins tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel.
Let's take you back to 1983, first edition of the tournament when it was a major, quote unquote. Amy Alcott won by two over Beth Daniel and Kathy Whitworth. Alcott notably created the fame Leap in the Poppy's Pond after her second dub at Mission Hills and continue the tradition after her third victory there, which wound up being her final one on tour. But how sweet that was to do it for a third time. So three players have won it three times. You see Amy, as well as Betsy King, did it in 87, 90, and 97, and then Anka Sorenstam, who won three from 2001 until 2005. How cool is this? We have a World Golf Hall of Famer now on the show, Amy Elcott, joining us. Amy, you won the Chevron Championship in 1983, its first year that it was considered a major. So how has the event evolved over time to what you see now?
Well, big time. That was one of the more exciting wins I ever had. Everybody wanted to get into what was considered at the time the Kraft Nabisco Championship. You had to finish in the top 15 to get in it. And it was a milestone for a player just to play in it. It's just grown by leaps and bounds, obviously, now with Chevron at the forefront, running it and doing great things. So, I can't be more proud of my three wins there. They were all very different. They were different. It's like a story being written. It was they were all different and very special.
And Amy, that's kind of where I want to go with this one. When you try to talk about the special landmarks in your career, I mean, 29 official LPGA Tour wins. You've won the five majors. You're in the Hall of Fame, the World Golf and the LPGA Hall of Fame. You've designed courses. You've written books, cameos in TV and film, advocacy of the game. What are you most proud of in all you've achieved in your body of work laid out in front of you?
Well, there's nothing like winning a major championship. You know, I've had a career where I always tell people it's like a little girl's dream come true, from putting into soup cans on my front lawn and chipping out of ivy and building the Elcott Golf and Country Club as a young kid with parents that didn't play, all the way through this amazing golf life journey, which golf really affords you. So to say I'm more proud of one thing, you know, walking up to the 18th to win the U.S. Open by 9 shots was pretty cool. But I also won my last tournament that I played in on the tour by 9 shots, and that was the 91 Kraft Nabisco, which is now the Chevron, that I jumped in the water with Dinah Shore, and my caddy Bill Curry. So there hasn't been more than one. But what I enjoy now more than anything is giving back, you know, giving back to junior golf. I'm on the board of the First Tee program here in Los Angeles, and just doing other things. You know, your life morphs into other things. And instead of just being myopic and the tour and working on your game and your conditioning, it's lots of other things now.
Amy, during your playing days, you had some amazing stretches and some dominant runs. If you look, you mentioned in 1980 that huge win at the U.S. Women's Open. You won back-to-back weeks. It was part of a season where you had 4 wins and a major. Nellie Korda's now won 4 straight starts, trying to now win the season's first major. What do you think of her run?
It's amazing. You know, I'm a big Nellie Korda fan. My lifetime friend from junior golf days is her teacher, Jamie Mulligan. Jamie used to caddy for me when we were kids. He caddied for me in the Long Beach City Junior. So I know how proud he is of her, and I watch her and text her. You know, players get on dominant runs, and when you're in the zone like that, everybody dreams of being in the zone. When you're not in it, it's really hard to recreate. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past her to really have a good run at it this week. It's tough to keep it going. But, you know, she's the modern day woman athlete, kind of like Caitlin Clark. Condition, fierce, focused, and you know, I'm a big fan of her and several of these other players out there. I just think when you're on a run, it can be like the domino effect.
Amy, it's great that you mentioned Caitlin Clark, because women's sports is really having a moment from an exposure standpoint. Ratings, a lot of it was tied to Caitlin Clark's amazing run through the NCAA tournament and then the number one pick in the WNBA draft. When you look at the lens, though, of women's golf, do they need a dominant player?
I think it always helps. You know, look what Tiger Woods did for the men's tour. Look what Scottie Scheffler's doing right now. Everybody wants to see these players in the limelight. It's good for everybody. It can be great if there's a rivalry. I always had players that, you know, there was one of eight of us that could win during our kind of golden years, that whether it was Lopez or myself or Pat Bradley or Hollis Stacey or Betsy King. It's great to have rivalries, but this is a great time for women's sports. And, you know, if you can't market women's sports now, there'll never be a time to market it. It's really hot. People are watching it. It's not on the back pages of the newspaper under a microscope, the way my mom had to used to look at my scores on the LPGA Tour. Mm-hmm. So it's a good time.
Yeah, Amy, as you talk about catching on, I do want to go back. Again, you're so iconic, the jump into Poppy's Pond. I want to go back to when you first won, you did it. You assume, like, oh, everybody's just going to do this. You to go win 3 years later and say, no. When you win, this is what you do. Take me through your thought process when you won the second time around, where you're like, no, I'm going to make sure this thing sticks. I'm going to jump back in the pond.
Well, that was just a moment of total excitement. I think during a practice round, I said to my caddy, Bill, I said, has anybody ever jumped in the water when they won? And he says, I don't think so. And so the moment actually came there in 1988. I was so excited to win. I just didn't even think about it. And I just jumped in, and not knowing that this would create the most iconic moment in women's golf. There were rocks in there and bird droppings and everything else. And it was awful. But, you know, I tell a lot of young players today, you know, this is the entertainment business, and you don't win very often, so you better embrace your stardom. And so that's, I think, what I did. Dinah Shore was actually kind of jealous in a way, because we had developed a friendship, and she says, you know, next time you win, I want to go in the water with you. And, you know, I tell people, I don't know how all the stars align, but my mother had passed away, who was a big dominant force in my career. And Dinah says, you got to win this tournament just one more time for your mom. And that was in 91. And she says, I want to go in with you. And so that's when we took Dinah in and created more memories. So it was really terrific.
You created an amazing legacy, and it's been really cool to see how it lives on, moving from Mission Hills to where we are now with the Chevron Championship in Texas. You won so many times, and Jordan touched on how many wins you had, 29. Is there one week where you say, that's the highest level I ever played the game at?
You know, I always tell people consistency is what champions really do. I mean, people can win one or two events. It's the consistency that I'm the most proud of. It's the years of winning a golf tournament that I think Jack Nicklaus and I were the only ones for like 14 straight years. It shows that you really didn't have a major slump, that you could find a way to win. And that's what great champions do. You're not really, you know, everybody makes mistakes, but you made fewer mistakes that week. I just want to say quickly, I really do know the player who's going to trying to get into the Hall of Fame, my good friend.
Oh, Lydia Ko.
Yes, I'm so sorry I forgot her name.
All good.
Lydia is going through the same thing I did when I was stuck on 29 wins before they ever changed the criteria to get into the Hall of Fame. It was going to be a dead Hall of Fame until they changed to the point system. And for a year and a half, I would show up at every LPGA event with the press asking me, when are you going to win just one more tournament? Because I was stuck on 29 events and had to win 30. And my majors, five majors, didn't count for anything special at the time. And so microscope is on Lydia to do something now, even though it's a point system. And it puts a lot of pressure on you to show up. And I used to tell people, I don't really care from that standpoint, but what I was the most interested in, you know, it's not going to prove to me anything I don't know to win one more golf tournament. But it's a lot of pressure on her, and it'll happen when she least expects it.
Well, it's so tongue-in-cheek, too, to say stuck on 29. What an amazing career you had, Amy, and it's great to revisit some of those memories here with you on Golf Today.
Thank you so much. Always great to be with you.
And a reminder how you can catch the Chevron Championship Golf Channel and Peacock beginning on Thursday. And you get a doubleheader, 10 a.m. Eastern is when it kicks off. Then we revisit it in the afternoon wave, 6 p.m. Eastern time on the weekend. It is NBC and Peacock Saturday and Sunday.
Rolling along here on Golf Today, and with the tour on Hilton Head Island this week, worth a look back at a guy who knows this course better than most, Jim Furyk, winner of the RBC Heritage in 2010, a playoff with Brian Davis. You may remember Davis called a two-stroke penalty on himself, which gave Furyk the win. 5 years later, Furyk shot a final round 63 before defeating Kevin Kisner in a playoff at the 2015 RBC Heritage. Furyk 63 was the lowest final round posting of an eventual winner in the tournament's history and helped him claim his first win since the 2010 Tour Championship.
And when you see Jim Furyk's career results at the RBC Heritage, all you can think is cha-ching. In 24 starts, he's made 3.8 mil plus, has had 8 top 10s, including those 2 dubs. And Jim Furyk has had 4 wins in playoffs in his career on the PGA Tour. 50% of them came at the RBC Heritage. We now have 17-time PGA Tour winner Jim Furyk with us, who's playing this week at the Invited Classic on the PGA Tour Champions in Irving, Texas. Jim, let's start with the RBC Heritage, obviously an event you've won twice. Back in 2010, it was your second win that season. At that time, could you sense this could be a monster year?
I was hoping so. I was hoping. It had been a few years since I'd won, I believe, 2010. I felt good about my game, but I think really Valspar was a springboard for me to kind of get that win, get the monkey off my back. And I was a little bit more relaxed for the rest of the year and really kind of got on a roll. That obviously probably the most successful, best year of my season, and, you know, culminated with winning the Tour Championship and then Player of the Year. So exciting year for me. And at a time when I was supposed to be kind of, I think, on a little bit of a downslide at 40 years old. So kind of nice to have a nice year late in your career.
And Jim, I want to stay with 2015 and that second championship at Harbortown. And I recall on 18 a lot of emotion from you because it had been a few years between big time wins like that for you. What do you recall from that glorious week in Harbortown, that second go around with a win?
You know, 2010 was fun. I had Tabitha and both the kids there. 15, I was on my own that week. We were running the Furyk and Friends, which has now become the Constellation Furyk and Friends, right in behind that. So we had a party that evening on Sunday, and I'll say, you know, showing up with a tartan jacket, Showing up to our cocktail party, our concert. We had a massive thunderstorm, and Stuart Sink and I hopped in a car and drove all the way to the event. So it was really, I guess, kind of the first one I got to share with my family and Tab and the kids, which was really cool. And the second one I shared with basically most of Jacksonville, who was at our event having a good time at the concert.
It doesn't sound like too bad either option. Jim, so much of your career was predicated off of precision off the tee, exacting iron play, consistency to lead to 17 PGA Tour wins. Jim Furyk 2.0, if he was turning pro in 2024, and so much has been made about the distance debate and the rollback, could he compete on the PGA Tour?
You know, when I went to college, I was actually long and wild, believe it or not. I was a long hitter as an 18 and 19 year old. I felt like at that time to become a more consistent player, a better player, I wanted to kind of ramp it back. I wanted to hit more fairways. And that was a key when I went to the PGA Tour. You know, I don't have any statistics to back it up, but we were hitting a lot more 180, 190, 200-yard shots to greens. Well, you know what? Back then, that was 5-iron. You know, and you weren't hitting greens from 190 out of the rough, at a thick rough. from that distance. You know, at that time I was trying to take a 7-iron, play it back in my stance, try to get it to jump and hop it on the green. So really I felt like in order to become a better player on the PGA Tour, I had to kind of dial it back a little bit and hit a lot more fairways. And that was a big key for me in my first 5 years on the PGA Tour to becoming a more successful player. Now, no chance, right? You're going to, guys are so big, so strong. And I'm going to start with the athlete. The athlete's bigger, stronger, faster. The equipment is bigger, stronger, faster. So now, even though the golf courses are longer, even at 500-yard par fours, these guys aren't hitting a lot of 5-irons into greens. They're hitting a lot of short irons into greens. And statistics will tell you that, you know, we're going to launch it and we're going to go find it. And even if we're in the rough, we're going to play better from there than the shorter players. And you know what, when these guys get on, when they're driving it well, you know, when Rory's driving it down the middle at, you know, 330 yards, he's hard to beat. When Scotty Scheffler's driving it and bombing it, but hitting a lot of fairways as he does, he's hard to beat. And, you know, when they're on, they're going to shoot some low numbers. And when they're not, statistics still show you that, you know, they're better off in the rough and closer to the green.
Jim, let's talk about low numbers. Nobody knows low numbers better than you do, my friend. Still, the record stands as the only guy on the PGA Tour to break 60 twice with a 58 and a 59, and nobody's gone as low as you did in that final round of the Travelers in 2016, posting a 58. We're never going to experience this, George, so I might as well ask him, what's it feel like to be in that type of groove, my friend?
A lot of fun. I guess you can call it the zone, whatever you want to say about it, but you know, being a guy that was known for, I guess, tough golf courses and grinding out pars, you know, I look back early in my career. I won in Vegas 3 times at 25 under, 28 under, 29 under. I think I was comfortable with both formats, but really cool to be able to do it again, kind of later in my career at the age of 43 and 46, shooting the 59 and 58. But, you know, it's, I like to say it's not any different than breaking 90, 80, 70 for the first time. I never really considered having the opportunity to break 60 on the PGA Tour, but you know, luckily I got a couple opportunities. I made the most of it, and really kind of had to pinch myself in the middle of those back nines both times, and basically tell myself to enjoy it. I mean, have a great time. You don't get these opportunities very often. Let's have fun with it, and let's be aggressive. And if you're going to go down, let's go down in flames. Let's go down being aggressive.
Yeah, certainly a Hall of Fame moment for a guy who inexplicably is not one yet, but certainly will be. And I want to follow back on that because you talk about the athletes, Jim, and how golf has just changed, but nobody's gotten that low again. Are you surprised by that nobody else has gotten to that 58 number?
It seems there's a few watches every year. You know, I get messages when there is a 50s watch, friends start texting, you know, it pops up on my phone, whatever it may be. There are a certain number of courses, I think, on the PGA Tour now that have, you know, maybe gotten a little bit short, that guys always tend to scare that number with and have even broke 60 on. So it's going to happen. I mean, I think Mr. Guyberger, I believe, had the record or had a piece of that record for about 37 years. You know, if it could go that long, that would be awesome. If no one broke 58 for the next 37 years, that would be incredible. But I think it's going to happen a lot sooner. You know, I think the game's just changed so much. The athlete's gotten better. The teaching mechanisms have gotten better. And it's going to happen, but I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts.
I'm guessing this isn't like a 72 Dolphins thing where you have the champagne on ice every time there's a sub-60 watch. But we'll see if that day happens down the road. Jordan was saying, I mean, you have credentials that stack up with guys we already see in the Hall of Fame. When you look at your career resume, do you feel that you should be in the Hall of Fame?
It's funny how I get at, I actually more and more now keep getting asked that. I mean, it's a no-win situation. But I guess if you're going to be blunt and ask the question, I guess I have to be blunt and answer it. I agree. I think there's some folks, there's quite a few folks in the Hall of Fame where my record stacks up. I think it's as good or better. But ultimately that's really not my decision. I think, I still enjoy playing the game. I still enjoy practicing and getting better. I was on that finals list the last time around, and hopefully we'll be the next.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for the time this week. Best of luck at the Invited Classic. And, of course, we'll be checking in with you throughout the year leading up to the President's Cup later this fall in Montreal.
I'm excited about leading the U.S. team and keeping an eye. You know, I usually don't watch a ton of golf, but I will admit that I'm glued to the TV a lot of Sundays and rooting for you know, I root for everyone, but I'm really rooting for the American guys that have an opportunity to make the team. And it's been exciting to watch. We had some great finishes at the Masters last week.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine you got some good options at the top of that American team. Play well this week.
I appreciate it, guys. Nice being on with you.